Earth, sky.
Our question for this commission on Arctic climate change, the Aspen Arctic Commission, was whether the existing institutional arrangements that are used to guide our diplomatic and international policy goals in the Arctic, whether they are going to be adequate or sufficient for the changes that are occurring there.
You're listening to David Monsma, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Monsma is Executive Director of the Energy and Environment Program for the Aspen Institute. In early 2011, the Aspen Institute and the Prince Albert II of Monaco Foundation released a final report and recommendations from a commission on Arctic climate change. It's titled The Shared Future. The report says the Arctic is being transformed by rapid change. It suggests that these changes will lead to unprecedented challenges in how the Arctic is protected and governed. The Aspen Institute's David Monsma spoke more about the new report on the Arctic, The Shared Future, with Earth Sky's Jorge Salazar.
Mr. Monsma, welcome to Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science.
Thank you.
So what is the main finding of the Shared Future report by the Aspen Institute Commission on Arctic Climate Change?
Well, as you know, the commission was formed as a civil society dialogue for purposes that are still unfolding. I think that everyone's aware that the rate of climate change and global warming in the Arctic is faster and has greater impacts earlier in the Arctic than in many places in the world, with the exception of maybe low-lying island nations. We wanted to understand whether the institutional arrangements that exist currently, the Arctic Council, what the Arctic states do, and more generally, if those institutional arrangements were going to be adequate or sufficient to address the rapid changes and the dramatic changes that are going to occur as a result of further global warming in the Arctic. So our major discovery, I think, over the 2.5 year period that the commission met, among many others, is that really there's a lack of a holistic, coordinated or integrated plan for the Arctic. In other words, we have many different sectors, many different human activities, many different needs in the Arctic, including the indigenous people that live there. But we don't really have a method or a system or a plan for conservation and sustainable development. That is something that is a shared responsibility across more than one nation within its own boundaries, and an ability, a greater ability really, an enhanced ability for Arctic states and other countries to organize and coordinate their work across the Arctic.
Right. I guess this ties into the name of the report, The Shared Future. In a nutshell, what is the future we all share in the Arctic?
Well, all of this depends on the science that we have. And the scientists, the ice scientists, the climate scientists, the people who work on this year in, year out, have been developing a body of data that for both for them and for the greater policy and I think public policy community and the public, It dictates that something strong is happening with regard to climate forcing in the Arctic. And so we already know a little bit about that. We hear about melt-off, the ice extent, that is the degree to which the ice expands and contracts to cover the ocean, is changing and shrinking. The thickness of the ice is getting less. And as we know from Antarctica and Greenland, there is significant melt-off. I think both the international community, but also business sectors and NGOs and other people who want to play a role in managing the future of the Arctic, and especially indigenous people, that we have some plan in place that allows us to work together. And so we've looked at several tools that are available. The question of the Arctic is this is a vast region. So it's understandable that most of that management is left to the sovereign states who have boundaries in the Arctic and to international agreements, including law of the seas. Those are the institutions on which we have to build. But I think what the commission in this concept of a shared responsibility is asking is that we need to be more deliberate and intentional. In other words, we need an integrated plan, one that looks at sectors together. And the tools that exist out there, and you may have heard about them in terms of different ocean marine protection, are ecosystem-based management and marine spatial planning. These are really conceptual and management tools that take years to develop. And I think the major import of the study is we need to begin that process now on a larger, wider spatial level and on a longer temporal level.
And in bringing together these leaders of science, environmental stewardship, industry, How would you characterize the dialogues that emerged?
Well, this is an issue that I think all sectors look to government to be keeping track of the changes that are occurring. And in fact, that's what's happening. I think all of the Arctic states have substantial science and institutional resources that help us understand what the changes are. And I think what the commission and in its dialogues tried to surface was that this is everybody's responsibility. We need the businesses and corporations that are going to be working on behalf of our energy needs in the Arctic to have high standards and to help work toward appropriate standards for wherever that work is going to take place. We need the environmental organizations and groups to work with both government and business. We need governments to take leadership, frankly. This is an area that I think both business and NGOs and people, the public, are looking for leadership in terms of an answer here. What is a plan for moving forward over the next 10, 20 years for managing this area?
And I guess these people will need to come together to deal with these big changes, these long-lasting changes that you just described.
Yes, I think that we need leadership for organizing purposes. That is, how do you 8 Arctic countries and 5 coastal states in Arctic and a plethora of operating companies in different shipping sectors, oil and gas sectors, a community of over 10, 12 million people who live in the Arctic. How do we organize in an international way? We all understand that the Arctic and Antarctic are unique places in the world, and the changes that are occurring there are dramatic. So the response has to be equal to the pace of change and the scale of change. And I think that's what the report it was trying to organize the best that it could, was that whatever we're doing, we need to match the rate of change. We need to be able to be responsive to what's happening, and something is happening.
In putting together this commission to deal with future change in the Arctic, what were some of the hardest questions that were raised?
There's a lot of hard questions. I mean, just how we define the Arctic. All nations have a different definition about what constitutes the Arctic. There are questions about whether there are other contextual forces besides climate change that's causing the change. So it's a combination of global warming, shifting wind patterns. There are a number of scientific issues always working, always changing. So for any group, government or a commission like this, to work with it is a huge challenge. We have science, we have technology, and we have pretty high scale diplomacy. We have all these things operating, but we don't have a place that brings them together. We live in an age of technology, information technology. There should be an ability to network better. There are concepts like network governance, electronic governance. The idea is that we live in an information age, but that information isn't well connected. One of the findings that I feel was important to the work of the commission was that we saw scientists doing their work, and they're able to use their scientific publication process to establish baselines and what's changing. Communities are connected somewhat to each other within their countries, and governments have diplomatic channels, but they're not well connected together. Business, people, governments are not, in an age of information technology, on this issue for these purposes, are not well organized. We think, I'm speaking on behalf of the commission, that some type of network, open source government, an Arctic Google, a Google Arctic, that is not for showing photos of your trip to the highest reaches of the Arctic, but rather it shows information about the changes that were occurring there. The walrus hauling out on a certain spit at a certain time of the year, a die-off of a certain marine life, new shipping activity, proposed oil and gas activity. That's where our information technology seems to be lagging behind what we know.
So transparency and connecting groups of people that don't normally talk to each other.
Exactly. We need a platform. It's hard to imagine, but I think we've all seen good examples. There are areas in the world where we've been able to connect communities to be able to understand changes. So, and transparency is the key.
What is your vision of what a healthy Arctic environment would be like? And how is that different from the reality today?
The goals for the Arctic are the same for the rest of the world. So the goal for the Conference of the Parties to try to hit a number, both in terms of how much temperature, how much increase in temperature Celsius can we withstand. what parts per million. We're sitting at about 392 parts per million CO2 right now. We're probably beyond what would allow normal cold in the Arctic. In Copenhagen, you heard some of the low island nations and northern indigenous people aiming for a target that said 2 degrees is too much, meaning 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial standards is going to be too high for the Arctic. So a healthy Arctic would be one that had the normal cold that allows people to live there as they have for the last 2 or 3 or 4,000 years or longer. One that keeps this environment in an ecosystem and ecological balance with itself and the rest of the world. And one that allows the cooling function that the Arctic provides as a part of the overall climate system to function well.
What's the most important thing you want people today to know about our shared future in the Arctic?
We do need to demonstrate to ourselves and to the world that we can come together and work in a integrated and coordinated way to manage an area of the world as a result of climate change. It's a reality now. The changes and the impacts that it's having are a reality, and our response needs to be convincing. We need to be able to show that internationalism is a part of global leadership for all countries. I think the United States has had this role in the past. I think others have also been able to demonstrate their leadership. And that's what we want for the future, is the ability to say, this is a special area of the world. It's symbolic about the entire ecosystem on the planet. We had a chance in other areas of the world. This may be the last chance we have to demonstrate that we understand how to conserve and manage a pristine area in the world, even though it's a wild and largely unknown area of the world, and still meet our human needs at the same time for this generation and for future generations.
You've been listening to David Monsma, Executive Director of the Energy and Environment Program for the Aspen Institute. This program was made possible in part by Shell, encouraging dialogue on the energy challenge. To subscribe to this and other free science interview podcasts, come to the subscribe page at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.